Welcome to Agency Highway. This is a podcast for digital agencies and freelancers who want to grow their business, earn more, and work less. Each episode, you'll hear from agency owners that are killing it, meet epic people that can help you along your journey, or just listen to me ramble on about something I think is cool. Head to agencyhighway.com for transcripts, action notes, and to join the community. I'm your host, James Rose. Now, let's get into it. This podcast is brought to you by ContentSnare. ContentSnare helps digital agencies get content from their clients on time, in the right format, without email. If you've ever needed to get content from clients, you'll know how painful it can be. You end up constantly chasing them for weeks or months, and by the time it's ready, there's a 900-long email trail full of massive images and a couple of brochures from 6 years ago. ContentSnare makes this a thing of the past by collecting content from your clients in the right format the first time and does all the chasing for you. Try it on your next project by signing up at ContentSnare.com. G'day and welcome back to another episode of Agency Highway. Today, I am speaking with Daniel Danes-Hutt from Amp My Content. Thanks for joining me, Daniel.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, great to be here.
I love this topic, right? So today we're going to be talking about driving leads with paid ads. And I love this for a lot of reasons. One, because we had some success with it and then it kind of went to shit and totally failed. Well, not failed. It just got too expensive and due to audience fatigue or whatever. But I know so many people are making this work. So I know it's a legit strategy. And I also know a lot of agencies try to run paid ads and throw it in the bin pretty quickly because of various reasons. But the biggest one I see is they're trying to drive paid ads directly to like here by a website. And of course that's never going to work because I mean, various reasons we'll get into this, but I really like the strategy of driving leads to content and then sort of getting in. So let's talk about you. Who are you, Daniel? Let the listeners know who you are, I guess a little bit about your story, and let's dig in.
All right, man. So I'm an Englishman living in New Zealand, so just across the pond, basically. Yeah. Resident here now. It's a crazy story. We were actually going to get kicked out of the country because I was too old to apply for residency. And so I got an entrepreneurship visa and started a clothing company. And then within about 5 weeks, we're in five stores. This is going back like 6 years now. And then from that, I started to learn digital marketing and then do it all and then got an agency. And then it just kind of went crazy. We had a viral post at one point that got us more clients than we could ever handle. And it's been a pretty crazy journey, but I have a paid ads background, like direct response. But it's my content that I write about it that does really well. So it's a really bizarre combination.
That's awesome. And you mentioned there briefly your case study that went viral, and we talked about this offline before, and I'm pretty keen to get you back to talk about that at some point, because when you have one thing that is so impactful for your business, I mean, sure, it might be hard to replicate, but it might still give people some ideas. So hopefully we can get you back on the show to talk about that at some point.
Yeah, totally.
But let's talk about paid ads to content, because you have just released it's like an 8-chapter guide under your Amp My Content brand, all about exactly this, right? So if I understand it correctly, it's driving ads to blog posts and stuff like that first, right? Because you get cheaper clicks.
Totally.
Yeah. All right. So I'll let you go into this. How do we get started? Like what results too? Let's talk about why we'd do this. Like what kind of results you've seen and then how do we get started?
Cool, man. So Amp My Content it's not very exciting, but it's all about content promotion because it's like, that's the main, it's the main thing that's stopping most people. It doesn't matter if you're an agency or a business. People are churning out so much content, but not promoting it.
Yeah. And right? Don't say it's not exciting. Cause to me, that's like, it's the favorite part of the week is promoting my content. It's like, it's like my Tuesday. That's my theme for the day. And I love it. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a strange human, but I don't know. I think it's cool.
Well, we're doing deep lake building right now. So I've been in a spreadsheet for about 3 weeks. all day, every day, sending emails. So I'm going a little bit stir crazy, but it's like, obviously there's lots of different channels of promotion and things like that. And some people, We actually do promotion in phases. We work with influencers, we work with forums, paid ads, SEO, things like that, because all of those channels have ability to drive traffic to your content, but they all have flaws. And so it's like it's learning how to work all of those together. So a big thing that we do once we've launched an article is we start to run paid traffic to it. One, because it means that it's getting traffic constantly, so we haven't just written something that's on the blog and no one ever reads it, you know? Mm-hmm. And also it means that it's getting traffic while we're doing link building and stuff. So there is some subtleties to it, but it's one of those things that is real simple. You're running an advert to a piece of content, someone subscribes, that lead gets nurtured and becomes a sale, or some of them will.
When you say subscribe, are you talking about like content upgrades and that kind of thing?
So
just in case people aren't familiar with that, let's make sure we sort of cover that.
Yeah, totally. There's three main areas that affect this. It's how good your content is, because it's pointless running paid ads to content that sucks and no one is opting in.
Oh, man, that's a whole topic, because this is one of my biggest pet peeves is people producing content for the sake of content. I think there's a shift that's moving away from this, but at some point everyone was just like, you have to write a blog post every week, and they sit down and they're like, oh man, what am I going to write about this week? And they sort of clutching at straws and then end up writing some just useless crap that no one cares about. These days I'm blogging about, I don't know, once a month, once every 6 weeks even, right? Because it's just like when I find something I know is really valuable and I can write a big valuable post on it, that's the only time I start writing.
This is our 9th blog post in 3 years.
Damn. That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's like, and that's exactly why we got into it, is I come from a working class background originally. Like my dad used to make fires and things like that, like stoves, like by hand and things.
Whoa.
So we never had any cash coming up. And so when I see people who are small business owners or whatever, and they're struggling to get traffic, they don't have something in place, it upsets me. And I see these people teaching them to keep churning out content, mm-hmm. and it doesn't do anything. It just makes them stressed. So they sit down and they're like, I've got an hour. What do I write about? I've got to do something. So first of all, they don't even have a topic. They're just going to pick something out of thin air. Then they're just going to put it on a blog to like the 8 people they've got who are subscribers, you know? And so it's like, it's not going to do anything. They're better off taking that hour and going to the beach, you know?
Absolutely.
And so a big part of it, obviously, is you have to improve your content. But the thing is, if you do, you can write less and you can write less often. I've got another guide on this, like literally how to take an old blog post and improve it. I got a friend who did it who works in he's over in Norway. He's a student of ours. He used to get 4 or 5 leads in the first week after writing a post. And now I think he got 18 in the first 25 minutes after like posting this thing. Cause it's just, there's certain elements that make up good content, right? And once you learn what they are and tick those boxes, it really is quite simple.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you gotta have good content, right?
So do you have any guides on how to create that good content, or is there somewhere you'd like to send people? Cause I will be linking up that guide for improving old posts, which I'll get the link from you later. But
yeah, man, totally. So, I only have 4 articles on this site so far. One is what kind of a manifesto of why you should be promoting instead of writing all the time. Mm-hmm. There's like heaps of reasons. Second one is how to actually improve that content. Third one is actually how to capture emails with a kind of a content upgrade, but it's more effective than that. Mm-hmm. And then this one, which is paid ads. So even with those 4 articles, you're going to have a good post that captures more emails and you can run ads to it. So like you never need to buy anything from us.
Ideal.
You know? It's all there.
So we'll link all that up in the show notes, which you can get at agencyhighway.com, obviously. But can they also get these at ampmycontent.com? Is there, they can find that on the homepage or not?
Yeah. So if you go to ampmycontent.com, the homepage will link you to that kind of manifesto post. And if you opt in there, you'll get all the rest of the content kind of dripped out, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. All right. So, let's actually talk into, I mean, I guess we touched on results there a little bit with that guy you were talking about that had, you know, even 4 to 5 leads in a week, you said that like it was not much, but to some people listening, that might even be a lot, you know?
Well, that's the thing. His clients are like $100,000 campaigns.
Yeah.
So, crazy. You know, he's working with Microsoft Norway and stuff like that.
Yeah. So, I assume there's a sort of prerequisite to this in knowing your target audience, right? And knowing what kind of information that they're going to find valuable. And I think that's another topic. Like, we don't really need to dig into that here. I don't know, unless you think we should. But to me, I'm sort of envisioning this as we've got some really good content. We're not just spewing out content for the sake of it. We've got a handful of really good posts that are very specific to our audience. So how do we get started in the actual promotion? I guess talk briefly on your content upgrade as well, which is translated to people that don't know what a content upgrade is. It's kind of an incentive for people to sign up with their email address, effectively converting them from a visitor to your blog post to an actual lead or potentially a prospect down the line. Yeah.
Totally. So the way that we do it, most websites get about 2 to 4% of traffic into a subscriber, which they can then nurture. That post right now is getting 83% opt-ins.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Our lowest performing one is 17%.
Okay.
You know,
do tell.
So, exactly like you said, so we call it a HSO, a hyper-specific next step offer. So every bonus is unique to that one article. We don't recycle, we don't reuse or anything else. It's also designed to be the next logical step that they want to take. So for example, if they were listening to this episode and I was talking about it, it'd be really easy for me to put a link to a video showing them how to make one, you know? So it's the fact that it's specific, it's unique, it's the next thing that they want to do, because you've got them all excited about a topic and they want to take action, right? So you give them the action to take. You don't want them to then go Google your competitor because they wrote how to do it, you know, or something like that.
Absolutely. So how then are you actually embedding this in the post? Like, you know, there's so many different ways where people are, you know, they might have a slide in or embed like a little pop-up within the content itself. How do you tend to collect those leads?
So this is the sneaky part. I only have one method of people opting in. Everything else is removed. I have no sidebar. I did remove the social shares, but somehow they've turned on again. there's no exit intent. There's no hello bar, header bar, or anything like that. When you give people too many options, usually they pick to do nothing.
Yeah, totally.
So I give them one action to take. That's the direct response part of me. I use a tool by Lead Pages called a Lead Box, which is basically a line of code that you insert in the article. I normally have it just after the introduction, near the call to action, and possibly if it's a long post, somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
Because of that, there's no other distraction. So they're in the post, because this is the thing. People drive traffic or promote or build SEO or whatever to content. And then they have so many distractions taking them away from that content. Like, it's designed to be a conversation that you would probably have had with a potential client. And yet, imagine if the entire time you were having that conversation, phone was ringing, someone else was talking, you were asking them if they wanted to do this and do this and do this. Well, it's like, it blows my mind that people do that, where they're driving people to it and then pulling their attention away in different directions.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a good point. Yeah. So what with these posts, like you said, one in the intro and one in the footer. Yeah. So like, how long are these posts? I'm sort of curious, because you know, we've got posts on our site that are anywhere from like 1,000 to 6,000 words, and the 6,000 word has got like stuff all through it, right? Like, because you know, I've got like the same opt-in, but in like every, it's almost like chapters of a blog post.
Yeah. Well, so this new article, in fairness, is as big as a book. It's like 30,000 words.
Oh, wow.
If you've ever read, I don't know, Jeff Walker Launch or something like that, it's more than that book.
Damn.
I don't recommend anyone come out with like an article like that unless you've got a good background of content, because it took like 9 weeks to write, you know? Anywhere from 1,500 to kind of like 6,000 words is perfect.
Okay.
I would normally, I don't want them to get banner blindness. So I only have it a couple of times in the post, because if you think about it, the introduction is designed to agitate a parent and get them excited to take action, and so they pay attention. Mm-hmm. And you pull them into the post. Straight away, I open a loop to say, hey, there's a bonus you can get. It's also at the bottom of the page.
Nice.
So they're thinking about it without even clicking, because ideally, I don't want them to click on it straight away and opt in, because not that many people... the content's designed to sell them on an idea or something like that. And so if they leave straight away, then it's not perfect. So then I have one towards the bottom, because by the time they've read through, and we heat map our content, and it's got like 70, 80% read through kind of thing, you know?
Wow.
And it takes 7, 8 minutes to read. At that point, they're like, wow, I really want to learn how to run Facebook ads now. And I'm like, hey, I've got a video here. If you want it, just click it. Where do you want me to send it? And that's the big thing. I don't have an opt-in box, because an opt-in box on its own is a perception of effort and being sold to and stuff like that. So what we have instead is a two-step, where it's either a piece of text or a button that says, do you want this? And when they click on it, the opt-in box appears.
Yeah, that's awesome. I like that. And I think that's what we actually need to do on our content too, because I've still got some old opt-ins. And for a long time, because I've been using ConvertBox, I'm a big fan, but they don't have inline opt-ins yet, right? And that's always been like a holdback for me. And now I'm like, wait, why do I care? Because you can still trigger the two-step with ConvertBox. I can put a button in the post, have them click and pop up the box. And so now I can transition away from my current lead system. But yeah, because I've seen a lot of posts showing higher conversion rates for two-step. Is that something you've experienced?
Yeah. So by having that two-step, if you can get someone to take a small action, it's something like they're 40% more likely to take another action with you. It's like a commitment principle where they've already started, so they want to finish. So by getting them to do that, you'll see probably double the amount of leads just by doing that one option. Obviously, it's got to be a good offer. Mm-hmm. If you only ask for one piece of information as well on the initial box, just their email, you'll also get more lift. For every box that you have, you'll see a 10% drop in people. So if you're asking for name, phone number, email, something else, people don't want to do it. Here's the crazy thing. If you ask for the email first and then ask for the details, about 80% of them will carry on and fill it all out. So invest the carrot. We talk about it. They've got like a 26-step opt-in, like an entire form that used to be on the front end, which would only get like 0.5% opt-ins. They changed it to just an email, and then they asked for this, and it was like an 80% through rate. Wow. But their lift was about 40%, and they're doing investment and things like that. So it was worth millions of dollars to them.
Yeah.
Just by changing the sequence of how people like to do that, you know?
And it's almost a topic for a whole other episode, right? Like this, I've been learning a lot about this kind of stuff recently. I just released a form for people to opt into my potentially new automation course that I'm going to build. And I was using the whole ask formula thing, Ryan Levesque ask formula. And it's the same kind of thing, right? You get rid of, like, you have a certain buy-in at the start, whether they've answered like a long question or something to start with. And then in this one, it actually flips it around, because they ask for the email at the end because they've already sort of committed to giving you all this information. And then, you know, the email is not such a hard sell. And I see it the same way, right? So you've asked for an email in this case, and then they hit next, and then they've already sort of committed to that opt-in. So putting the other stuff in is a no-brainer at that point, right?
Think of an add to cart button. You're on Amazon. There's a book you want. You click add to cart. They've even cut it down because it's all built in.
Yeah.
So let's say you're on a different e-commerce site. You click add to cart. It's on one button. But then you go across to the cart page. You check out, and then you fill out your name, your address, your card details, and everything else. If they ask for all of that up front, chances of you buying it would be super, super slim.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But it's that commitment thing that you expect afterwards that you stick to. Cialdini's got this, Professor Cialdini, who did the book Influence and Pre-Framing. He's got great books on it, and he's got a talk at Stanford as well where he's talking about these things where, like, they're trying to get people to put up neighborhood watch signs in their garden, and people wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do anything, but they asked him to put a sticker up in the window, and like a lot, it's a small ask. So a lot more people said yes. They went back to those people afterwards and asked them to put a sign up or to even kind of monitor the streets and go out. And they got a heap of people, but like the first time around, everyone was telling them, no, too busy. Blah, blah, blah. It's funny how our brains work.
That's an epic book too. If you guys listening haven't read that before, Robert Cialdini, I think that's how you pronounce it, Influence, still one of the best business books and I guess life books of all time, in my opinion, which we'll link up in the show notes. I better take a note of that. So let's dig in. We've got like to the actual Facebook ads now, because we've got the content, we've got an opt-in. I think, the actual follow-ups there is probably going to have to be another talk or something, like the actual lead nurturing, because that's a whole topic in itself, which, you know, you can do once you've got their email address. There's so many things you can do, whether it's sharing them other helpful content or webinars or Facebook custom audiences, all kinds of stuff, right? Which, I mean, this is probably a whole podcast in itself, not an episode, like an actual whole podcast. So I don't think we'll dig into that here. I want to talk about getting people to this content that we've just put so much effort into writing and setting up with a specialized lead capture. How are we going to get people there?
For sure, man. I would just say one thing. If you don't have all that stuff in place, if you're a small agency and there's only like two of you or whatever, it doesn't hurt to just email them manually. You know, you got that lead, just email them, because it's the same approach that you would take with a referral, right? So like, you don't have to have everything in place right at the start, because it is a massive, massive topic.
That's a good point, man. That's a great, great tip.
Because it's like, that's the thing as well. You'll find that conversion as well when you take the time and you email and you find out their issues and whatever else, get them on a Skype call or something, you'll convert super high. Anyway, paid ads. So the guide is massive, right? So you have
Let's keep it short for this.
I'm just gonna bullet point each chapter, because each chapter's in a sequence, because you follow along and actually take action as you read it. By the end of it, you have the ad up and running and things. So obviously, you got to have good content, and it's got to be good lead capture, because without that, it's all directly attached to things, because your ad cost is going to be much higher if your content doesn't convert. And if your leads aren't converting to sales as well, it's going to be even higher again. But likewise, if you're better at converting leads or you're better at converting sales, then you can afford to spend more. So the first thing is like figuring out how much you can spend, because so many people don't know that, and they don't know if their ad is working or if it's within budget and stuff. So that's the very first chapter. We get it out of the way. It's not very exciting. It's one thing minus another thing gives you a margin. I mean, it's like, okay, well, your goal is to get the cost below this.
Yeah, and well, we went through that exact same process. So for SaaS companies, the general figure is trying to get your customer acquisition cost at about a third or 30% of your customer lifetime value, right? So if we make, say, $300 on average from someone, the amount we could spend was $100 per lead, right? So and then we can rationalize how much we can spend from that based on our trial to paid conversion rate. So we know, you know, if it's a 10%, then we know we can only spend $10 on that lead, on trial lead.
And obviously you can tweak each area and it'll have like a direct effect. Mm-hmm. So if you can improve that one thing, it means you've got a bigger budget here or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like at the moment we're spending $1 and getting $22 back. That's off the initial 3 months based off of like, we're trying to be conservative, but most customers stay with us for 10 to 12. So in reality, like we're making far more, but we're trying to keep tight margins right now. Mm-hmm. So you figured out what you can spend so you can drive traffic to it. We actually cover like how to do research and how to interview your customer in the article, because for one, you can't really write an ad that's going to convert if you don't know the audience. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, your content's not going to be that good if you also don't know the audience.
Yeah, so exactly.
We teach this research because guess what? You can go back and improve that post before you start the ad, because it's like for certain languages, certain pain points, certain desires and things like that. But like I said, at the start, the process is simple. You run an ad targeting the right people, sends them to the content, content becomes a subscriber, nurture to sale. Big thing, I'm going to jump a few steps, is most people don't realize that almost every ad will start off at a loss. Like even a really good ad, you're spending $4 and you're getting $1 back. So majority of people will just stop. When in reality, you need data points. You know, you haven't got statistical significance to know if an ad works or not yet. I've had it in the past where I've set up an ad, a couple of different tests, and one of them was sucking. And I went away camping for the weekend, and I came back, and that was outperforming by about 5 times.
Wow.
But in the early traffic, if I just stopped it too soon, you know, I wouldn't have known that. And so this is the thing. If people don't know their margins, they quit too fast.
Yeah. I feel like that's happening more and more now, too, with both Google and Facebook's like learning. You know, their ad algorithms and their automatic bids and stuff are starting to get much, much better. I listened to Mike Rhodes, who is one of the world's leading AdWords people, on a podcast the other day. And he was talking about that the algorithm is starting to beat his team's manual stuff more and more and more, right? As time goes on, like every like few months, it's just the improvement's crazy. And soon the amount of like just the automatic bidding is probably going to outperform most humans, right? So, yeah.
It was at Shremko's.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, yeah.
I might put that in the show notes. In that interview that I'm talking about. Yeah. So let's keep going.
I still need to listen to it. It came up.
Oh, sorry.
So,
yeah.
So
no, you're right. Keep going.
Talking of AI, so most people give up too soon, right? They're not running ads for long enough. And a big problem is people are trying multivariate tests.
Yeah.
As in, okay, you've got an ad. There's different things that you can test that's going to improve, right?
Mm-hmm.
You all good?
Oh, yeah, on crappy Thailand internet here, but hopefully this will be all good to the listeners. It didn't seem to drop out on my end.
There's going to be so much value, though. It'll be fine.
Honestly, man, I'm loving this episode so far. So I really think this is going to be valuable for a lot of people because it's kind of like a lead generation system that people can put in place. So totally. A lot of people are missing that, right? So something that's scalable like this, you know, and predictable is what people need.
That's it. I won't bullshit you. It takes time. You know, you got to spend a little bit of money to do it. But a big thing is people copy the top dogs. And so when they do that, that's the ones who've got 25 writers and they're publishing all the time and they're promoting it and stuff. If you write 25 articles and don't promote it, it's not going to work. Same for ad testing. So there's two types of ad testing. In an ad, our goal is to get the highest rate of clicks from an ad to the landing page, the article, whatever. So the elements we can change are the headline, the image, the subhead, the text, and the call to action in the ad. Now, if you're A-B testing, you just test one thing at a time. So you might run 4 versions of the identical ad, but with just a different headline. Mm-hmm. So to do that, to get to 10,000 views or whatever, it doesn't actually cost that much. You can set it up for $5 per ad per day. Within about 7 days, you've got a result. If you wanted to test all of those things all at once, every single variation, suddenly you've got 250 variations, which is multivariate testing.
Mm.
If you've got a budget, it's the fastest way to find the winning ad. But the thing is, you need to get enough data to every single one of those ads.
Yeah.
And you probably don't have a budget to do that right now, which is why we talk about doing A-B tests instead, because by the end of it, you've got one ad that works. And that's all you really need to just bring in people in. You can make new ads and stuff after that when they fatigue and try new audiences. There's all different stuff you can do.
Oh, just quickly, I realize we haven't actually spoken about this. When you're talking about paid ads, are you talking about Facebook or Google or both or something else?
The guide is just about Facebook for now.
Okay, cool.
Because
no worries.
It's a big topic and the things are slightly different. So here's the thing. We cover it in the guide, but Facebook's AI, it's machine learning. It tries to find a winner before statistical significance. So basically it tries to find it real fast.
Mm-hmm.
So in the past, I've had 2 ads running on Facebook. I said, this is clearly the winner. And then this ad is like 5 times better. It's cheaper. There's better leads. There's more sales. So how you test and things like that really brings, really adjusts how your ad performs. So what we do, which I don't see anyone do, we create a focus group. I niche down as much as I can to get people. I get an audience of about 1,000 people who are my ideal person. I know based on all these different data points. Now, because it's specific, it costs a lot more to show the ad to them. So during the test phase, it costs more. But the thing is, I know I'm getting the response from the right audience. You know, I'm not testing an ad that's going out to someone who can't afford to buy what I sell, you know? So we're testing with this focus group. And once we find the variations, the best image, the best headline, the best thing that gets the most clicks, what we do then is we change the audience and we broaden it and we let the AI do its magic. And what happens is it starts showing it to more and more people at a lower cost because we're not being as specific.
Yeah. Here's so just quickly with that focus group, I just want to expand on that. So by that, you mean you are using audience targeting in Facebook to reduce that audience size to, you know, in this case, maybe 1,000 people just by using like a cross-section of different interests, right? So maybe they're a small business owner. They have a Facebook. They're an admin of a Facebook page. They are a dentist if you target dentists, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah, down to get it as tight as possible.
We get it super narrow. So it's not just someone from that country. It's someone who has a job. It's someone who's shown an interest in this. It's someone who reads this blog. It's someone who is also reading about this particular niche topic.
Yeah, which is all stuff you can do on Facebook. And again, there's like a whole minefield there, but this is...
Yeah,
and they can read
it. We cover it in the guide as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So and then you're expanding this into a bigger audience once you've sort of trained Facebook into the right people.
That's it. Well, so if I just rely on Facebook alone, they're going to try and get me the cheapest leads possible. But that might be people who are not relevant for my offer fully. Yes, they're great. They're in the same industry. They don't have a budget, things like that. So what, by targeting those people, by getting super, super specific and measuring what gets the most response from them, I know I have an ad that responds to, big agencies. Or whatever. Then when I expand, that ad is now showing to a much wider, broader selection of people. But I know that the copy, the image, everything else converts. I know it converts really, really well. So what happens is you expand and the cost goes down, but then the clicks generally go up because we're not being as specific. Here's the kind of sneaky thing. As it starts to get more and more conversions, Facebook starts to learn who it is you're trying to target. And they start trying to target that focus group without you having to pay to niche down, if that makes sense. So I've targeted like this tight focus group to get the most response. Mm-hmm. And then I tweak the ad, I model it, I groundhog day it where I keep testing things each time to see what works. And then I take that ad and I put it into a wider audience. And Facebook's showing it to all these different people. And it's also showing it to those focus group type people. Mm-hmm. And it starts to find more and more people and they start responding. The AI then learns who it is you're trying to target and who's working best with that. And it's logical that it works best with those people you were testing with. And so it's now showing it for cheap to these guys without you having to pay to show it to them, if that makes sense.
So are you creating this like a new ad set with the wider audience and then using the Facebook post ID as the ad? Or are you just editing the original ad set to expand the audience?
You can do either, or you can set up a brand new ad.
Yeah.
Knowing full well that like that has been field tested.
Right. Okay.
With that audience. Normally what I will do though is I will use the post ID because it's already got social proof.
Yeah.
So it's already got comments and links from people who are probably the ideal customer on there.
Yeah.
And so then when it goes out to a broader audience and someone says, hey, I know that guy, he runs XYZ agency. I see him at so-and-so conversion summit. Then it's like, it's going to, also help, you know, because rather than just running a blank ad with no interest.
Absolutely. And just to clarify, if you haven't used Facebook ads before, what we're talking about here with the post ID, so every time you post something on Facebook, including an ad, it gets an ID, right? So you might post something to your page, you know, and like it's an ad, and then it'll have a special little ID that you can actually tell Facebook, this is the post I want you to run as an ad. So that's what we're talking about here and just reusing that same ad in different ad sets and audiences.
Okay. Do you want to know like a ninja tactic? Sorry to use that word.
absolutely.
So I just remembered this. This is something that we have in place that works really well. So as people interact with your ad, as it gets likes, comments, shares, things like that, clicks, it has a relevance rating, and the higher the relevance, the lower the cost. So we tested with a focus group. Now we've gone broad, so straight away the targeting is cheaper, but now it's getting more relevant, and so the costs are going down and stuff like that. So we're getting people to engage. Here's a really sneaky thing. So the content upgrade, it takes someone to a page to get their bonus, whatever else. I have a call to action on that page to say, hey, you probably got a friend who would like this post. Do you mind sharing it? The share link is the post ID. So every time they share it, my Facebook ad, my paid ad, now gets a new share, and the relevance goes up, and it goes in front of their audience.
That's awesome.
Sneaky, right? And so what happens is almost immediately, it's getting in front of more and more and more people. And it makes sense. Like, why would I just link them to multiple Facebook shares of an article when I can just say, hey, here's the link. Here's the actual link. They share it every time. Relevance goes up. People see more and more links, more shares, more social proof.
So that's in the Facebook post itself. You're asking them to share?
So imagine they come to the article and they opt in. The opt-in is going to take them to a specific page where they can, like, okay, here's the zip files and stuff. Click here to save, whatever else. There's a call to action on there, and the call to action is, I can't remember how I set it up. I've got a file on my computer somewhere. But basically, it's a line of code, and it's basically you click to share, but rather than just sharing the URL of my article, it shares the URL of the Facebook post ID.
That so is still super cool. I didn't even know you could do that.
Right? Ninja. So
super ninja.
It gets a share of the post because I'm not asking for it right away. I'm getting higher opt-ins because I'm not asking for two different calls to action.
Yeah.
And because people have opted in and it's like huge value by that point, they want to, like, I get people emailing me all the time, like, to say thank you for the content and stuff. So it's so easy to say, hey, do you mind just sharing this link? And it's all automated. And they share the post.
Absolutely. I am absolutely going to steal that and roll that out on our posts. All right, we're done here. I don't need any more interview time. I've got my... No, you're kidding.
Well, that's basically it, right? Like, once we're almost at the final stage. So we created an ad that did really well with a focus group. And now we're feeding it to a broader audience, but they're still the right people. You know, they're still marketing agencies or whatever. But we're just not being as specific. We're not saying only people in London who are in this job role who are making XYZ who read this website, you know? We're just saying broader. So, again, the costs are going down. Relevance is going up. Click-through is getting higher. Social proof is getting higher. At that point, by then, you should already be below your lead cost to conversion because your clicks and things coming across. We also changed the goal as well. So, originally, when we're testing for impressions because we want to show it to as many people as possible, as many times as possible, to measure response. Afterwards, we are giving Facebook a specific goal. We're saying, hey, we want subscribers. So show it to this group of people, track who actually subscribes, and start adjusting our audience for those. Because we did the focus group of the ideal audience, they're the people who are then opting in. And so it's like it's self-learning about the perfect people for it. And so the cost starts to go down. Obviously, there's other things like there can be issues like why isn't it delivering? How do I scale? Because you can't just double the budget and get double the audience and things like that. There's different ways. But we don't cover that in the article because it is another upcoming one because it's a big topic, you know? But that's man. You run a paid ad to a piece of content. The content is good enough to convert. They get nurtured into a sale. And because you've tweaked those things, you've got a good performing ad, you've got a good performing piece of content, the lead cost, we were getting 15 cents leads, New Zealand dollars to US people. So in US, it's like 0.8, it's like 8 cents or something per lead. Yeah. And we could afford to spend $32 a lead. So it's like, well, now I've got a budget that I can burn through our competitors and things, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's it, man.
Whoever can spend the most on ads wins, right? I hear that quite a bit. So just quickly, something I just thought of. Are you throwing remarketing into this mix?
So it's funny you should say that. I have two blogs. I have originally, like that case study I wrote was about retargeting. So we have a website all about that. It's on hold right now because this is our focus project. It's something I'm doing with my partner. She's a content writer for a SaaS company. So it's like something we're working on together. She's a ninja. She just got to like 100,000 visitors a month. Damn. Up from 20,000. Anyway, wow. We are doing some remarketing in that if you say the people who come to your article, you can track if they opted in or not. You can then remarket them to a lead page, which is the exact, just a landing page, which is the same offer, that same content upgrade, but it's on its own page. It says, hey, did you miss? Whatever. You can still get this video sequence to show you how to run these ads.
Nice.
Doing that, you'll get more leads as well. But it's one of those things that you don't have to have right away because, you know, so many elements to all of this.
Oh, yeah.
To put it in place. You could also remarket people who actually get onto your nurture campaign. I think it was Salesforce where they saw a 35% lift of people who saw an email and an ad about a piece of content rather than just the email alone.
Yeah.
Say you've got another article that's coming out in a sequence, you could also start advertising to those people for the next article and things like that. But that's absolutely a super topic, you know?
Yeah, that's getting pretty crazy. I think we should probably sort of start wrapping this up here because I think this got super technical. Hopefully we didn't melt anyone's brains. I'm feeling a little bit melted. But I also have a whole bunch of notes of stuff I'm actually going to implement. So this has been freaking awesome. Thank you, Daniel.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, but I just want to quickly wrap up and then we'll talk about where people can go to find out about find out more. So what I really like about this strategy is that it doesn't really require as much work as people probably think, right? Like when people start talking about content and blogging, it's very daunting, right? Like to have, you know, to think you have to blog every week. We talked about this before, but we don't, right? Like we're going to write a few really epic articles. And hell, we could probably start with one, right? Do you even need to start with a handful? Yeah. So we've just got one awesome piece of content. We're putting a lot of effort into making a very specific content upgrade or an opt-in for that audience. And then we're running ads to it. Like that's pretty much it. And the ads is a bit more complex, right? Like we're going to start with a focus group, run some A-B tests, then widen the audience. But really, this is something you could do as a one-man team, really.
Yeah. That's why we do it. We it's the beauty of it is it's all automated. So once you're testing, you set up the test. It might take 4 days. So you go on and do something else and just check in each day just to make sure it's okay. Mm-hmm. And that's it. So that's the beauty of it. It's why we started AMP with this brand new, like this massive guide. It's why we started with this one. It's because if you are a small business and you have a small team, you can set this up and usually you're time poor, right? Like you don't have a huge amount of cash or you don't have a huge amount of time. And so you could set up this ad, get it running, be aware that you're going to lose money at first until you get to a point because you've got to keep testing until it works. Mm-hmm. When we started, it was $27 a click. Now it's $22 back for every dollar spent. You know, that's so crazy. Yeah. So it like, and it's effective. We actually don't even spend that much per month because we can't handle the load.
Like that's a good problem to have.
Sales coming in, right? It's like, it's the next thing we need to figure out. But can you imagine that? So like if you are a small business or you don't have to close up shop, stay there for another 3 hours, you know, with like another coffee at 7 p.m. and try and figure out how to make sales work tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You can set this up. But again, like you say, it's one of those things. Not everyone gets it to work. It does take a little bit of effort.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, yeah. I mean, I think it's, I don't know. It's all, you have to be willing to spend money. That's what I'm sort of trying to say. And monitor those ads. Like, I think that's a huge mistake that I've made before as well, where I thought, okay, I'm going to do some ads and then just kind of like let it run and then forget about it and not actually spend that time checking in to make sure, you know, everything's running as expected.
When I can give you a paid ads horror story, but I don't know if it will help the audience go and read my article. But, so we have a retargeting ad. So we run like a training program and stuff. We do every 2 or 3 months, we'll let people into it kind of thing. And we retarget people who have seen the ad. That just went past. It's just gone. because they're super warm audience, we might only spend like $30. So it's people who've seen the sales page within X amount of days, just show them the ad up to 10 times. Mm-hmm. Facebook decided to, it shit itself, and they didn't target people who saw the sales page anymore. It targeted every woman in New Zealand between 22 and 55.
Oh, wow.
So the first hour it spent $450. You know, they're going to refund us that. And it's never happened in like any time that we've done it before. And we have things set in place so that we don't spend too much, you know. Mm. It's really easy. You click on a button, you say, don't spend more than this per day. Mm-hmm. It's fine. But yeah, like that thing did happen, you know. Yeah,
but that's like Facebook's fault, and that's why they're refunding it.
Yeah. And it's never happened in all the years that I've been doing it. Content-wise, something you said before, I personally believe you can run you can get to a six-figure business with only about 10 blog posts. I don't think you need any more than that. It's just certain assets. People write content. There's different archetypes that you need to successfully sell online, and people write for traffic. It's all they write for. Mm. But if you write case studies, they'll sell for you. If you write white papers, they'll get all the backlinks you ever need to beat your competition. If you write how-to guides, people are going to share, and influencers are going to share it and stuff. But you have to be strategic about what you write. Like I said, we've only done 9 posts in 3 years, and yet we paid the bills and things, you know?
Mm. Yeah, and I think we're going to need to kind of get you back and talk about some different types of content, what kind, like especially this case study thing, because I'm really interested in that, because in my mind, you know, I've always playing devil's advocate here, like, I don't understand. Like, I would never read a case study of someone else's business because I'm like, I don't give a shit about their business. But apparently,
people do case studies wrong. That's why.
Oh, well, there we go.
Yeah, I'll share with you how to do it.
Absolutely. So I will definitely get you back to chat about this again. Where can people go to get this guide? I think that's the main thing we should send people to, right? Because I'm going to go and read this. It's probably going to be my afternoon here.
So AMP My Content is the blog. It's a bit on the nose with the name, but it makes it easy. For the guide, it's ampmycontent.com/promoted-content.
All right.
And it's because we are literally trying to teach people about an effective way to promote content, paid promotion, you know?
Absolutely. That is freaking awesome. I'm going to be, because I was just about to launch a new Facebook campaign. This comes at a perfect time for me. Yeah, I will get this shared out. This is awesome stuff. Thank you for joining me, Daniel.
You're very welcome. Thanks again, man.
Well, that was a freaking awesome episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If so, please share it with someone you think will get something out of it, other web designers or digital agencies. Well, feel free to leave us a review on iTunes. Just search for Agency Highway and you'll find that. Don't forget to jump over to Daniel's site, ampmycontent.com/promoted-content, to grab that guide. I'm going to be reading that right now. So awesome. I'll see you guys in the next episode.
Discover how to grow your agency, earn more, and work less at agencyhighway.com. Head over there to get resources from this episode and full transcripts. See you next time.
This episode was brought to you by Content Snare. If you're a digital agency or just need to get content or info from your clients, Content Snare can help you collect it on time and without enormous email trails. Give it a try at contentsnare.com.